Hey, what is up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show, a very special episode of the Touch Arcade Show, where we have nothing planned, but it is episode 100. I'm your host, your main man, your Iron Man, made it all 100 episodes, no absences whatsoever, unlike these characters. Joined this week by editor-in-chief, TouchArcade.com, Eli Hodapp. What's up, man?
Hey, I shaved my beard.
You did. I saw that. Yeah. You kind of look like a little boy, vaguely, like a scary little boy.
Now I'm getting carded everywhere.
That's not bad, right?
Well, it sucks because my driver's license has like me with a beard on it, so everyone kind of gives me like the three time once over.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
It was an accident.
My old driver's license had me with some crazy hair. You think my hair was bad before? I went to the airport once. Security guy like gave me the quadruple take. And then
I
laughed.
Imagine you as the white guy with like those like super juggalo style cornrows with beads on the end.
Yes, that was definitely me. And speaking of beads and beards and hair, joined this week by Jared Nelson. How you doing?
Good effort on the segue.
Yeah, you know, I feel like at episode 100, I've already peaked, and from here it's just downhill. Right.
I feel like I didn't realize it was 100, and we've been talking about this coming up for so long and how we're going to plan something awesome, and then we get here today and we don't have shit planned.
We have tons planned, Jared Nelson.
Yeah, what are you talking about, Jared?
Yeah, we're going to be talking
this
about...
This show is entirely intentional.
Tons of great video games in celebration of our 100th episode. We might get some user questions and feedback in celebration of our 100th episode, and hey, maybe we'll even talk about some news today in celebration of our 100th episode.
You
tons
know,
of new content.
The heavens have opened up in a massive flood of my area, which I can only take as a sign of the 100th podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. This is what episode 100 is all about.
Our miserable neighbor that has their basement flooded, like, whoa.
Oh, man. I remember that. That's a Midwest problem, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it couldn't have happened to better people, I guess. Not that I like other people's misfortune, but...
Growing up, man, it was all about getting a new pump downstairs.
Your sump pump, yeah, shit gets real when you lose power and your sump pump can't pump.
Yeah, yeah. In Midwest, we got basements. Yeah, that's where the party's at. My old basement had a shag carpet too, and one year it flooded, brother. The smell was amazing.
Everything here is, I'm sure Indiana was kind of the same way, in that everything is built on, you know, like cornfields and stuff, super flat. So when we get a ton of rain, like, there's big flooding.
Yeah.
Thankfully we kind of live on the higher side of the hill, so like, we're a-okay.
Yeah. No basement drama.
No, actually, I was kind of surprised because like I woke up and I was like looking at, you know, Facebook and seeing all my local friends being like, oh, 6 inches of water in the basement. And I'm like, oh, God. Man, and I went downstairs, everything's fine.
Ain't nobody here in South Carolina have a basement. Nobody. Like, that's just not a thing. It's really weird to me.
But isn't your ground there, like, really, like, silty, sandy?
I guess.
Not basement-y?
Yeah, kind of maybe. I don't know how this stuff works. I just thought it was a weird choice. Who doesn't like a cool, dark, horrible place to live in,
yeah,
right?
Basements are great. I don't know. Why wouldn't you want a basement? I don't know. If there's a reason why you wouldn't want a basement, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, you could put all sorts of stupid shit in a basement, like a Warhammer table. You know?
A finished basement is the best. Like, I feel bad for people that have lived their lives not knowing the pleasures of a finished basement.
Yeah, man.
I spent most of my life hanging out in a finished basement.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably true for me, too, now that I think about it. Man. Yeah,
that's where you get your big screen TV.
Yes, the old TV, actually, because the new TV goes in the front room. The old one gets shuffled down.
The old couch. Like, everything... Yeah. Everything that, like, doesn't look pretty anymore but is still super comfortable goes down into your finished basement.
Yep. Yep.
So it really is the best.
It's almost like a cave in a way.
Yeah.
People are missing out, man. People are missing out. Jared Nelson, have you ever been in a basement?
Yeah, I've been in one.
Are you sure?
You know, you're West Coast living. I don't know how you guys roll.
No, I've been in a basement. yeah. I mean, I've never lived somewhere that had one, though.
Root cellar?
Yeah.
I don't know what a root cellar is, but...
Our old house was built on a hill, kind of, so... The back part of the house was lower, you know, went down lower. So there was like a giant crawl space under our house.
Oh, and, nice.
That was pretty fun.
I miss crawl spaces.
But it was just like dirt and rafters and stuff.
Yeah, man. Those are the best crawl spaces. You know what I also miss? Attics.
Attics are not bad.
Yeah.
My parents have a super creepy attic that's like a million spider webs.
Yes. That's why they're so awesome. And they're usually never finished, which is a good thing. So you're just walking on like rafters, yeah, right? Yeah. Or whatever those are called, those beams.
Yeah.
Good my, stuff. My grandparents have a bomb shelter.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I went in it once when I was a kid, and I still have nightmares.
Do they keep it stocked?
No, I don't think so.
That's too bad. That's too bad.
I don't think it's been opened in a couple dozen years.
That's the way you want your bomb shelter, though. You want to open it, and it's like a gateway to another world.
Yeah.
Our Costco sells the bucket of disaster supplies thing, like the whole really? Like 14 days of meals for two people or whatever. In a bucket. Man. Like $100.
Can you imagine eating out of that?
I kind of want to, like, the problem is it's all like super carbohydrate rich food.
Yes, that's the problem. That's the problem.
Doesn't really jive with my lifestyle, but I am curious.
Now, I would like to eat out of a bug out bucket for a little bit. I just like a couple days just to enjoy what a bug out bucket is all about, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be a cool experience.
So, Eli, at the top of the show today, I actually wanted to talk to you about something. Before, you've talked about League of Legends, and I think both Jared and I kind of glaze over because we didn't really know what it was about. Me, I have just now jumped into it after my little foray into StarCraft, and wow, it's a video game.
Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't respond earlier. I typically don't pay attention to my phone outside of working hours because it's so irritating.
Yeah, no, I feel you.
But yeah, what do you think?
You know, it's a cool game because I don't think it's as skill-based as StarCraft is, which is not to say that I was particularly skilled in StarCraft, but there's a lot of APM, a lot of fast movements, it's all contingent basically on like how fast you are and how good you are at grouping stuff. League of Legends is a little bit more, I mean, it's still skill-based. You still have to know what to do. You still have to realize what opponents can do to you, but you don't have to be so fast, right? It's more about just thoughtfulness.
Yeah, I feel like. That's what I kind of like about it is it's not like, it's all about team comp and being, you know, like being a good teammate and knowing how to counter stuff.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But it's not to the point. Like, I feel like you can do well at League of Legends if you're not like a super good video game player that, you know, is fast enough to do all the StarCraft APMs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Need. For sure.
But the community is pretty nasty.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Like, really nasty. You're going to come across that a lot as a new player because you're going to do bad. I mean, it's like you just download the game. Of course, you're not going to be great.
Right.
But, like, man, you will hear about it.
Yeah. You know, and I've been playing with friends, which helps. It's usually the opposing team in general chat, which I turned on for some reason. I don't know why.
Turn that off. I have no reason to be able to communicate with the other team. Just pretend they're intelligent bots.
I don't know why I did that. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I should just turn it off. But, you know, like, it's weird because I'm only level 8 right now, and it's because I bought a couple of boosts just so I can kind of get caught up with my buddies who've been playing, you know, forever. And I've been playing against a lot of Smurf accounts, which is a weird phenomenon to me because, basically, if you're unfamiliar with League of Legends, this is what happens when a pro player basically just makes a brand new account and starts at level 1, right?
Yeah.
So they play these basically like the wrestling equivalent of a squash match. Where, like, they just destroy you for 20 minutes before you can surrender and quit. And, like, I don't understand the appeal of that. Because, like, I was talking to this other team through general chat the other day. They were way too good to be, like, level 3 or 8 or whatever we were at the time. I was just kind of like, what's really the point? What's going on through your head when you do this, when you make a new account? Because, like, all you're doing is you're guaranteeing yourself just 20 minutes of beating me before I surrender.
Yeah, period. It's stupid. I mean, like, the absolute best games of League of Legends for me are the ones that run for, like, 45 minutes where, like, everyone's level 18 and has crazy items, and you just, like, have that constant back and forth before, like, one team fight allows the other team to just, like, storm in and finally kill your base.
Yeah, that
like,
push
that's,
and pull
that's where
neat.
It's fun, is, yeah, like, that constant, like, oh, man, we almost got him. Oh, shit, we lost one of our important dudes. I hope we can defend while, you know, he comes back up and all that. But, like, I just don't understand, like, the need to, I mean, because how is that even fun? I mean, if you just want to like decimate the other team, why don't you just play like easy bots,
right?
And just go crazy,
right? Because easy bots are probably going to be a little bit more skilled than me too. So I mean, it might actually be a little bit more fun at the end of the day, right? Because they'll actually move, whereas I probably won't know how.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. The community of League of Legends is terrible because those people probably then like gloat after the game about how hard they beat you and like everything else, and it's just like, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird, but I mean, I guess at the end of the day, I want to keep playing it. There's a couple things. Actually, one thing I wanted to talk to you about is, like, the lack of balancing in the game, I think, is weird just from a design perspective. Like, a lot of those characters are seriously overpowered in some pretty funky ways. in a different at different parts of the game too. So like an Ash character is going to be pretty worthless for the first 20 minutes, but then after that she's like a god character, you know?
I need to find a video to show you on the concept of intentional imbalance in a video game. Because like essentially what happens with League of Legends is that like so you know the more quote unquote you know overpowered champions eventually rise to the top, and you know people eventually figure out how to counter those, and then those you know what you would call overpowered champions then become like the second tier champions, as they're no longer good as people have figured out how to you know like really shut them down or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So like the fact that there is this like constant flux in the game is actually what makes it really approachable. Because, yeah. like for instance, in StarCraft 2, until you hit, like, that super, super pro level where, you know, you have your 200 APMs or whatever,
right,
and, you know all the counters and stuff like that, you're never, ever going to do anything new.
Yeah.
Because, like, you just can't. I mean, because you're not at the level where you can do anything new. But, like, you can go into League of Legends as, you know, a player just started and be like, hey, Ashe isn't that good early game. You know, let me shut her down hard and like see if I can't get her to the point like or that, you know, see that we've won the game by the time she gets big and scary.
Right.
Or stuff like that. You know, because there's so many like drastic rock, paper, scissor moments in the game, like it makes it much more approachable for your typical person to have like some kind of strategy like that.
Unless we're talking about Master Yi, who is boss no matter what and can heal in front of a tower, which drives me nuts.
Yeah, Master Yi's the worst. It's just an experience with the game thing. Like, you'll start to see that like certain champions seem real good, but that's because you don't know how to play around them yet.
Okay.
Because I can honestly say that like there is no champion in League of Legends that does not have a counter of some kind, either through buying items or like playing a certain way on your team or whatever else.
Yeah. So who's your dude, by the way?
I play all over the place because like. When you get to level 30, people start really forcing the North American meta, which is, you know, you have like a kind of like a melee, like a tanky guy top, and then a dude in the jungle that's killing all those NPC creeps, and like a magic user in the middle, and then like a ranged attack damage guy in the bottom with a support character.
Mm-hmm.
And like typically there's like this massive pissing match during champion selection of who gets to do what.
Right.
So I typically just am like, yeah, I'll do whatever. Like, I don't care. I just want to play a game without everyone being all pissed at each other before the game even starts because they didn't get to play their fucking little dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of noticed that. People get a little hot and heavy about it. Or like when you accidentally miss a gank or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Whenever you're coming out of the jungle. I play with Yorick, which I noticed that you did too in that screenshot you posted the other day.
Yorick's pretty good. I really like Pantheon.
Okay.
Really
good. Yeah. You like him, huh? See, I tried to play as him the other day and like he just seemed about worthless mid game to late
game. Honestly, like the biggest thing that you need to learn about League of Legends, and it's for any new player listening as well, is that like you are almost always better off being more conservative than you think you should be.
Right.
Because it is better to like the worst thing you can do in that game is die.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, if you don't get a kill, but you didn't die, or, you know, like, you didn't get a kill, but, like, you didn't put yourself at risk for dying, like, that is always better than, like, being an idiot and, like, going out and getting killed.
Yeah, okay. I can feel that. I also like Hecarim, or whatever his name is. Hecarim?
Hecarim, yeah. He's good.
Yeah, dude, he's awesome. Jungler. Jared Nelson. He's a jungler.
Jared's so mentally checked out of this.
Yeah,
I guess. I absolutely am.
You should try it out, man. There's a Mac client. We should get in together. A little Touch of Cade League of Legends match.
Yeah. It'll probably turn out about as well as me playing Minecraft does.
Hey, man. I'm telling you, might like the game. Might click with you, dude. I like it. It's hyper-competitive. It's fun. I guess we should probably move on, though, because we probably alienated like 50% of our audience, too. Even though League of Legends is like the biggest game on the planet. Which is kind of freaky.
It really is. And like, since it's both Mac and PC now, like, I really think that like, if you want to have an opinion on free-to-play games and be able to discuss free-to-play games in an intelligent manner, like, you need to play games like League of Legends and Team Fortress 2 to see like what things can be like outside of like the buying power-ups or, you know, buying time skips or whatever. Because both of those games are fantastic free-to-play games, and they just prove that, like, things don't have to be the way they are on iOS. That's just, like, the way everyone's going right now.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, too, with League of Legends. I picked it up, immediately spent $5 to pick up a cool dude, which was Yorick at the time, or $10 or whatever, and then I immediately pumped, like, $15 more in to get cool costumes and other characters. Not a big deal. Like, it was great. I don't understand why video games don't do that more.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Weird.
Me either. So on in other news, in the kind of AAA world, Nintendo had a bunch of announcements at its latest Nintendo Direct, which, if you don't know what that is, because you're really into iOS, Nintendo Direct is like basically like its weird little quarterly, not even quarterly. It's like every 3 weeks or 2 weeks or something like that. These guys come out and they announce a bunch of products for the 3DS, Wii, or Wii U, or whatever. And this week was pretty cool, actually. They announced that Earthbound is coming to the Virtual Console in the U.S. Finally.
Earthbound sucks.
You know what? I booted you out of Skype.
Honestly, it doesn't do much for me either.
Oh, my God. Look.
I will say I'm playing Chrono Trigger now.
Fuck Chrono Trigger. Play Earthbound. What are you doing? What are you doing with your life?
Nothing, actually. Honest answer.
Earthbound is a fantastic game. It's like my list of two greatest games ever goes Far Cry 2 and then Earthbound. That's where Earthbound ranks.
Is this Earthbound 1 or Earthbound 2?
Mother 2 in the U.S. or just Earthbound.
So, like, I don't understand why everyone's getting so excited about this.
I think we're getting excited about it because this is the first time Nintendo has actually publicly acknowledged that a lot of people really want another Earthbound game in the U.S. And they're actually selling it.
Or do you think it's like a thing where they can essentially just package up their ROMs in 10 minutes and throw them on the virtual console store?
That was always the hurdle, though, because Earthbound has a bunch of, what's the word, sampled music from bands like the Beatles and stuff like that. Really? So I guess that was always kind of the rub, is like, what are we going to have to take out to make this game work on virtual console without having to have to pay a bunch of licensing fees and stuff?
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was, I don't know. It was always the fight.
Here's my thing with Nintendo now, and like kind of got into this a little bit with one of our writers in our little secret backend chat. But like, there's like nothing they can do to like interest me in buying their stuff anymore. I think, like, I don't know. I feel like I've just kind of like moved on.
Yeah, I can see
like
that.
The continually rebuying the same thing and everything else.
You know, the thing that always boggled my mind, and this is so far off subject, but still. Why don't they release a blown-up 3D Pokemon game for the Wii or Wii U?
I think that's what they're doing for the 3DS. Isn't the next one?
Yeah, but that's the 3DS. I don't give a fuck about that.
Isn't there a Pokemon MMO?
Right?
For
hey,
PC or whatever,
like, would you like to make money, Nintendo? Here, let me help you. Let me sit on your board and make you millions upon millions of dollars.
A hardware company.
Still, they're a first-party publisher, too. You know, like, It just drives me mad that I still can't play a blown up Pokemon game while sitting on my couch with a controller and a screen size that is decent.
Like, yeah,
it hurts on the inside.
I mean, like, I just don't understand the whole thing of like getting so excited for the same game that you've played a million times before. I mean, like, everyone gets super stoked when there's like Zelda on the box of a video game, right? But I mean, like,
yeah.
This new Link to the Past, like, I can promise you, I could probably tell you exactly how the game's going to play.
Yeah.
I'm sure I could tell you the story. I'm sure I could name at least half of the power-ups that, you know, you get in dungeons, if not the majority of their functions.
Yeah.
That's not just a problem with Nintendo games, though. That's a lot of games are the same formula over and over.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess I shouldn't specifically single out Nintendo as much as... Like,
I mean, they're
know.
Very notorious for it, but...
I think...
The whole, like,
I think
endless it's a, sequel thing does nothing for me anymore.
I think it's acceptable to really point at Zelda as maybe the worst offenders of sequelitis, though, because those games got raw and boring quick.
Twilight Princess is the last one I played when I had a Wii, and...
Did
my
you quit?
God, like, yes, yeah. I quit and I put like 60 hours or something into it and was like, is this thing ever going to end? And it just became too tedious and I put it down.
I got to the time temple and I was like, well, I remember doing this 400 times. I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why it just dawned on me suddenly after doing everything else I had already done in Zelda games 800 times. But finally, I got to the time. I was like, I can't will myself to do this anymore.
What do they do, though? Like, how do you make it different?
You open it up, like you quit relying on that. Like, first temple's a fire temple, second temple's a forest temple, third temple's the whatever temple. Now you get the master sword, go to the time temple. Like, just stop doing that.
I mean, that's the game, though.
Yeah, I think the game is a puzzler, right? Like, it's a dungeon based puzzler. Just switch up, like, quit relying on weird shit like that all the time. Just like, okay, you know what? We're not going to have a time temple in this game. I think that would greatly improve Zelda, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I wish I had, you know, like, I feel like I just am able to point out the problems with Zelda and don't really offer any kind of good solution, because, like, I don't really know what you could do to freshen up that series. I mean, part of the problem is, like, 30 years old now.
Yeah. Well, look at, like, Wind Waker, which was, like, such a radical departure, even though some of the foundation elements were the same. But, I mean, this huge open world where you could, you know, go on your boat and explore for hours and, you know.
Yeah, and that was
totally different graphical look, like, whatever. And it was, like, people flipped out about it. Like, I remember seeing Wind Waker screens and being like, awesome, this is, like, a cel-shaded little cartoony Zelda. Like, I love it. And I was so blown away that everybody hated it.
But, you know, in hindsight, I played
it, and that was one of my favorite Zeldas in a long time, since probably, like, Link to the Past or Ocarina.
In hindsight, though, people backpedaled on that so hard.
Like, yeah.
The game is celebrated now for being the outlier.
I mean, when it was hot and it was a new game, people were like, this is terrible. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird.
You know what? Okay, let me throw this out here, Eli Hodapp.
Yes.
Zelda as a first-person or third-person action RPG, similar to an Elder Scrolls game. So an open world, towns, villages, quests.
Like Metroid Prime or something?
I think that that's actually a really good... it's an interesting idea in that, like, I think maybe the problem I have with Zelda games now is they feel, like, so flat and old compared to, like, real story-driven RPGs.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess it's an open world kind of adventure game, right? But Zelda games could not be more linear.
Yeah.
Like, at all. You know, like you have no choices, you have no options, you have no nothing other than, you know, like, hey, go through the 8 different dungeons, picking up, you know, each power up everyone's going to get, using them in the exact same way. Like, everything else, there's not even any kind of, like, creative puzzle solving where it's like, well, hey, you could use the hookshot here, or you could do, you know, a couple other different things. It's very cut and dry. Like, hey, there's crack in this wall, this is where I use bomb.
Yeah. You know, like, I think Zelda's world would be really neat for that kind of fantasy open RPG, too, because it would be totally different from everything else we've ever seen in that genre, if that's what you want to call it, too. You know? Because it would be cutesy. It would be light. And it would have these mainstays that we're all familiar with, but in different positions and stuff like that. I think it might be good.
You know what I always kind of thought might be a neat thing is, like, if you are playing... Like you know how some of those, like, Lord of the Rings games, like, I think Lord of the Rings, the MMO, did this where, you know, you weren't ever playing as any of, like, the Fellowship characters, but instead you were playing in a world where, like, all of that was taking place.
Yes, yeah.
You know, where, like, maybe you're not playing as Link, and maybe you don't even rescue the princess, but there's all this other really important shit going on while, you know, Link is off fucking around a dungeon that, you know, you need to take care of, and, like, has, you know, equally big impacts on the world, or... You know, like, whatever. There's so many interesting things they can do with that universe that it just almost seems kind of sad that it's like, all right, well, here's a Zelda formula. Go nuts, guys. It's on your 3DS now.
I feel like we found our title, by the way. While Link is fucking around in a dungeon, ellipses. I think that's good. I think that's good. Should we get into some iOS real quick? I feel like.
Let's skip it.
Yeah? You want to skip it this week? That's cool.
Yeah,
I'm into that. Okay, so I'll just start out here. Half-Brick, this new game, Fish Out of Water, is an interesting title for me because I'm not quite sure I get it. Anybody else have that issue?
I was kind of talking to Arn about this. That, like, well, first off, the reaction on our forums is kind of interesting. This is really split between people that are like, oh, this game's great, you know, and people are like, what the F is this? I insta-bought because of Half-Brick, and, you know, I'm so disappointed this game's so shallow. But, like... I guess the way that I look at the game, and I don't know if this is how you're supposed to look at it, or, you know, if I'm just, like, way more moderate with my video game hate or whatever, but, like, it seems to me, like, I kind of see this game more as, like, an interactive kind of fish tank, I guess.
Yeah.
And that, like, so the gimmick of the game is that every hour, I don't know if that's real world hour or, like, in-game hour, which accelerated, or I don't know how the time works.
Real world, I believe.
Well, so the weather changes, and every time you load up the app, the weather could potentially be different. Which can substantially change your strategy into, like, which fish you use to throw, like, how you throw them, when you use your boost stuff, and all that. So the way that I've been kind of playing the game and really enjoying it is kind of similar to how I play, like, any of, you know, my pick-up-and-play iPhone games, like Dual Jump or whatever, where I'll just, you know, like, load it up, like, randomly throughout the day, play it for a couple minutes, and put it down.
Right.
And, like, doing that every time I go to it is different. And it's cool because it's like, oh, hey, there's some huge storm today. I need to figure out what I'm going to do with these giant waves. Or like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. The, you you know, water's really flat, I'm going to go nuts skipping these guys. Or so the guy, so it almost seems like the problem is that Half Brick hasn't tempered people's expectations very much in that, because, like, I mean, you look at their older titles, which, you know, like Fruit Ninja and Jetpack Joyride and stuff like that, like games that, you know, you can just sit down and grind out forever if you want. I mean, you could sit down and play Jetpack Joyride all day long.
Right.
And, that's a pretty, you know, skill-based game. And it's different and everything else. Yeah, but I mean, like, if you sat down and were like, hey, I'm going to play Fish Out of Water all day long, like, I mean, you're going to get bored.
Right, yeah.
And that's just the nature of the game. But the nature of the game is that you don't play it all day. Instead, you play it, like, five times during the day.
Right.
And then, you know, like, maybe three times tomorrow and four times the next day and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Design-wise, I really like that weather system. Like, we were talking, like, and we've always been talking about this. You know, what can you do to kind of freshen up these endless games? I think dynamic systems like that, really cool idea. Weather is really neat.
Cool. I mean, Fafric is smart. You know, they realize that your typical player isn't someone that sits down and plays Jetpack Joyride for 9 hours, you know?
Yeah.
It's someone that's like, hey, I'm waiting for the bus. I'm going to play this game for a little bit.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, that's the bread and butter of the App Store. So for them, this game's always different. And it's always cool. And I don't know. I think that's...
Well, nice. I also think of, like, Fruit Ninja... when it first released, and it was just one mode, you just slashed fruit, you just avoided bombs, and, like, that was it. And then they added so much stuff to it over the years that it's really kind of like a totally different game now. And I'm sure they're going to add, like, tons of crap to this game, too, you know?
Yeah, more fish.
Yeah, it's kind of foolish to think that they're just going to release this and be like, all right, done, guys.
Nice. Yeah, but, I mean, they're good at making, like, the little dollar mobile game to play throughout the day type thing, you know?
I was thinking earlier about what could really capture my attention in this, and I feel like some sort of fish collection mechanic would have been neat. And I realize that probably their bigger plan is to sell these fish or add them through updates and stuff like that. But wouldn't it be neat if it was more like an aquarium where you, as you pitch fish out into the ocean, you kind of found more?
I saw kind of a cool idea on our forums where someone suggested, you know, like being able to somehow unlock, like, you know, cosmetic additions to your fish, like, you know, a pair of glasses or whatever for your whale or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be cool.
Something, you know, something silly, like some kind of treasure mechanic that, like...
Gives you ownership.
Yeah, it, like, gives you a reason to,
like... I'm a sucker for all that customization stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so am I.
It'll be interesting to see where this one goes. As of right now, I'm still kind of like, I don't know. It's not that it's offensive or anything. I still played it quite a bit today, actually, probably for about 20 or 30 minutes, but...
It's fun. I'm still filling out, like, what the different fish do and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I could see getting to a point of where you got everything dialed and you just know your limits, and all that's really left to do is check in here and there to see if the weather's different to get, like, a better score or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's definitely going to be in my rotation of, you know, like, little time wastery games. And I think that's where it fits in best, is that little folder on your phone where you got, you know, like, Doodle Jump and Cannonball and, like, those other games that, like, you play until you get bored of them, which doesn't take very long, and then you just go to the next one.
Yeah.
And you kind of, like, repeat that cycle as you have time.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I think that's okay.
I'm going to throw this little... This seems like a good spot to do it, actually, before we go to break. I played Cut the Rope Time Travel today, and it's kind of like that, too. Like a Doodle Jump or something like that. Is that it's just, like, a little time-wastery kind of puzzle game that didn't really draw me in because it's so much like the old game, but it has some novel mechanics.
Well, I guess what's interesting to me about, like, how the strong negative reaction to, like, these casual games is that, like, I mean, I play Cut the Rope, too. It's good. It's Cut the Rope, you know?
It's
cool.
Cut the Rope.
Right? I mean, it's not, like, it's not hardcore at all. But, I mean, like, I don't understand why there's, like, the need for it to be hardcore or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, like if you want a hardcore game, like, there's a million, like, you know, super crazy RPGs now and, like, strategy games and stuff like that. Like, you know, if Cut the Rope or Fish Out of Water, like, isn't for you, like, cool. Who cares?
How dare you?
You know?
How dare you, Eli Hodapp, bring sense and logic and even temperedness to this podcast?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just always... I mean, maybe it's because... I don't know what it is. Like, but I just... When I read the, like, strong, strong reactions that people have on our forums to, like, games they don't like, I'm just always like, man, I wish I cared that much about anything. You know?
Yeah. You might care about your car that much if I take a bat to it. How angry would you get?
Yeah, I mean, I'm being a little sarcastic there, but still.
Oh, you know, so you don't want me to hit your car now?
You could if you want.
Okay. All right.
I overbuy insurance, so.
Good. I could really smash the shit out of it then, huh? Is that what you're trying to say?
It wouldn't cost me much to get fixed either.
Okay. All right.
And well, I think with my insurance, if you total it, I just get a new Prius instead of a...
Really?
Or I don't know how long that like new car replacement thing lasts with Allstate. Maybe I'm outside of that. I probably am.
I think
you guys should like figure out the details of this insurance fraud scam off the air.
Yeah. Actually, we can just do it right now. Let's take a little break while Eli and I discuss some amazing specifics on things.
While you're at it, can you just burn my house down? But let me know so I can get like everything I care about out of it
and claim it anyway, right? We got lots more to talk about on the show, including a ton of brand new video games. We got a little bit of news, and of course, we'll get to user questions, comments, and feedback. And hey, thanks again for listening to us. If you made it to episode 100 with us, 1 through 100, thank you, dear listener. You're awesome. We'll be back after this brief musical interlude.
I do have a cat game. A bouncing ball on a string, and it bounces around the screen. Cat games.
Jared loves cat games.
Yeah, amazing.
Big fat cat.
Fuck you. Cat games.
The power of the kitty corner.
Hey, welcome back to the Touch Arcade Show, episode 100, spectacular, in case you forgot, where we're celebrating our 100th episode in grand fashion, with tons of guests, new content, thrilling interviews, and things like that.
Oh.
Things we should have done, actually, now that about it, in hindsight.
Happens. Whatever.
There's always episode 101, you know, and if it doesn't pan out, 102.
That's true. We could even just start renumbering them, so it's always episode 100.
You know what? I was into that. It should always be. We should just stop numbering them because I feel like we hit it.
100.01.
Yes, like updates, like video game updates. We'll work up to our release of episode 101. I like it. This segment, I wanted to start off with an email because we got a big one. A games is art question here from Andrew.
Kill me now.
Hey guys, the podcast has become a staple of my 3 a.m. post-closing Saturday morning. Love what all your personalities bring to the discussions of games in general. I was speaking to a non-gamer friend the other day, and she said something that made a lot of sense to me. The rub gamers fall in for the same sort of market newspeak and consumer lingo that marries the industry, which some of us like to see as an art to money. There seems to be less discussion about gameplay mechanics, visual style, voice acting, etc. Thinking about all of the back and forth in the comment sections of sites like yours, I can't help but wish the diction free-to-play IAP trade shows budget never appeared in our discussions. The language dominates the other side of the conversation, the anti-corporation folks who refuse to touch a single free-to-play game. I wonder what would happen if we only focused on the games as an art medium, not a profit vehicle. I think the, quote, gross corporate, end quote, games would naturally fall out of favor because their mechanics, what makes a platformer say, are now married to the profit vehicle to the ultimate detriment of the game.
I think my brain broke.
Yeah, hang on. I got stuck on diction.
No, I get what he's saying is that, you know, if you're talking about, I guess, you have to talk about games as art, you have to talk about like Roger Ebert, because he kind of brought that whole thing to the forefront. But you know, if he's reviewing a movie, he's not telling you like, oh, you should go see this movie, you should spend the $12 or $15 on the ticket and go see it, or like whatever. He's talking about, should you spend your time to watch this movie, no matter if it's brand new or it's like 10 years from now on video or something like that. You know, he's critiquing the movie and whether or not it's like worth your time to watch. And I think a lot of time video games reviews come down to, this is worth your money to purchase because it's fun and these are the reasons why or whatever. And that's kind of a distinction, whereas you should just be kind of like, and I think we try to avoid value propositions, but it's weird on the App Store because sometimes it's like, yeah, this game's okay, but I mean, it's $1 and I had like 20 minutes of fun with it. That's worth it to me, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
IAP, it doesn't help that IAP has become so systemic too, like it's just a part of everything in the game, so you can't avoid the conversation. And I think there's value in telling folks because they want to know what is going on with the IAP. Now it sucks. You know, Eli and I were making fun of IAP the other day in our drowning video, I think, which ended up being more of a discussion about its IAP than an explanation and a critical breakdown of what the game is and how it plays.
Well, that seems to be the case with most like free-to-play game reviews of any kind now. I mean, the Dungeon Hunter review on the front page, like 2/3 of the review is how you pay for it.
Yeah.
Which sucks. I mean, I really don't like that, but I don't know how you avoid that, because that's the relevant part of these games. I mean, because anyone can download them for free, right?
Yeah.
It's just a matter of like, hey, am I going to like sink my time right into this?
That's more of evaluating whether or not you should spend time on something or not, and how you'll be spending that time.
Yeah, and a lot of this stuff, especially games editorial, I mean, it's evolving. But I mean, a lot of it just kind of traces back to a time when games were just seen as a thing you bought for entertainment. It was a thing that cost money, and they were reviewed as such. Replay value was a big category in reviews for quite a while, and it might still be on some sites.
Yeah, that puts us in kind of a weird position, because especially with how much free stuff there is out there. I mean, it takes you less time to download and install a free game and play it for 5 minutes and see if you like it or not than it does for you to like seek out a game review for that particular game, you know?
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah. We're just in a weird spot with this kind of stuff. I don't know. I mean, you can argue that games are art all you want, I guess. But I mean, I think, and I don't mind it. I think that's a valid argument. But
I don't know. As far as games as art thing is concerned, like I think you could make an argument that any creative medium is art,
like poop
could
drawing.
Be art. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know,
that's sort of how I feel. Anything could be art.
That's. I mean, I think that argument, people just like getting really fired up over it for some reason, which
is weird.
I don't know. It's kind of like to me, that's kind of like the whole Android versus iOS thing. I mean, I know people that are like hardcore Android fanboys that are always looking to pick a fight about like how their phone's so much better than my phone.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, cool, dude, I'm glad you like your phone. Like,
yeah. There's still a
you know,
lot.
Like, yeah. Cool, you don't think video games are art. That's fine.
I think you're hitting on like the idea of like validation, right? It's just like people still want to feel good about their hobby being video games, or they still want to feel good about picking up an HTC phone instead of an iPhone.
Yeah.
So they have to kind of drag this out like this?
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm just floating an idea. I don't know.
No, I think that's true. I think people want to be validated, and that's really all they want.
Yeah. I guess at the end of the day, just be comfortable with video games as a thing.
Be excellent to each other.
Be excellent to each other. That's perfect. That's perfect. Actually, this is probably a good segue if I could think of one really, really quickly, which I cannot. Jared, you've been playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Rooftop Run, and those guys say things like radical and cowabunga, dude, and excellent, probably. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. Hey, I wish that game had fewer one-liners, or I guess more one-liners, because, man, it gets repetitive.
Yeah. I miss the Raphael of the first movie, who was kind of angry, depressed dickhead. Like, I really wanted my Raphael in this game to be that guy, and he is not. In my mind, he's just an asshole, and I can't shake that.
Well, I play as Leonardo. I haven't played the other turtles yet.
Oh, of course
Sorry.
You play as
I'm a Leonardo.
Leonardo
guy.
Of course you play as Leonardo.
I wish you could have sound on, voices off.
Yeah, right? I don't know. I can't figure out if I like this game or not.
Yeah, I actually like
on the same page. I don't know if I like it or not either.
I like the locomotion and the verticality of it. I thought it mixed up that formula just enough to kind of really draw my attention.
I feel like the you know how it kind of like hones in on an enemy and you kind of bash them and that's how you keep your momentum going and stuff.
Right.
I feel like that's all really not very tight.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I'm very accidentally. Sometimes I'm hurting someone and doing a cool combo and it looks awesome, and then the other times I swear I'm doing the exact same thing and he just falls flat. Or he gets hurt, or like whatever. It doesn't feel consistent to me.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I like the idea. Like, I think the visuals in the game are cool, and it's like you can customize your turtles. I think that's awesome. And I don't know. There's a lot of things I like about it. It just doesn't feel very good to me.
I don't like how all of the game's functions are based on tapping. It almost turns it into like a rhythm game more than like a runner, it seems like. I mean, I think that's what seems weird to me. Is that like I basically don't really need to pay attention, like as long as I'm just tapping.
It kind of has that God of Blades problem, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you
know,
can call that a problem, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to keep playing it because I want to unlock cool stuff for my turtle.
Yeah, you could just pay. You can give him $10.
Another cool thing I'll highlight about this game is the meter that you fill by collecting like the little mutagen orb things or whatever.
Not needed. I didn't like that.
Oh, really? I thought it kind of like kept you on your toes because you die when it's empty, right? Or was that just coincidence that I kept dying?
No, you die. You die.
And when you fill it up, you get like a turtle time thing, and then it turns into like a weird tapping mini game.
I just made it like 30 seconds of the game, and I'm not even looking at the screen, just like tapping every second.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Bummer, dude.
Here's how you make this game awesome.
Okay, tell me.
Everything visually the same, whatever, but have the mechanics be more like Robot Unicorn, where you can jump, double jump, dash, that kind of thing. You have a little more control over it.
I think that really would fix it.
And then when you get to that Turtle Time thing where it's this dumb tapping mini game, have it bust into a little Infinity Blade, like, you know, fighting scene, and you fight off a few dudes, and then you go back to running. How cool would that be?
All right. I'm kind of feeling that.
Right?
Kind of feeling. Is Casey Jones in this game?
He better be.
I hope so, because I feel like we're kindred spirits.
Have you guys watched the new cartoon this is based off of?
I have not.
I've heard really good things about it.
Really?
I mean, I don't have cable, so I don't...
Is Raphael a dickhead?
I have no idea. I guess April O'Neil is no longer a like reporter, and instead is like this weird like kind of computer hackery person.
Really?
Which feels more relevant, right?
No. No, it doesn't. How dare they?
I mean, like, no, here's the thing, though. Like, it does, because, like, you know, if this is a show targeted for kids or whatever, I mean, how we've gotten news has changed so substantially that you can no longer relate to, like, that news anchor person. But, like, when you think about it, like, when we were kids, like, you know, the 5 o'clock news or whatever was like an annoyance because that was when like the afternoon cartoons were over.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you knew like, you know, I could probably still name like most of the local news anchors from like the 80s just because you knew them because you saw them every day. So like April O'Neil and Turtles back then made sense. But now I bet if you ask some random like 8-year-old, like, hey, who's a person on local news? They'd be like, what the fuck is local news?
The other thing is like news is now... It used to be like the news is where you got your news. Now you get your news from like the internet or Twitter or wherever. And the television news is kind of like the second to report what's happening like on the internet.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not like, I see how you're saying it's not totally like relevant anymore. It's more relevant that she's someone plugged into the internet world and or whatever.
Right. That's what I mean. It's kind of an interesting spin on that whole thing. Cause I really don't think a kid these days could relate to a reporter. I mean, because like reporters, you know, like it or not, I mean, it's kind of a statement on the media, I guess. But I mean, I think that's kind of like a dying job in a way, you know?
Just your description of this cartoon so far. I don't like it. MGM, really? Lionsgate, whoever owns the Turtles property, the license for movies. If you guys need someone to write a dark, gritty reboot of the Ninja Turtles, give me a call.
I would like that, though. A dark, gritty Ninja Turtles.
I'll give you a Raphael to die for.
Christopher Nolan. Can we get him on board to remake the Ninja Turtles movies?
Why not? Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. I'd be into that, maybe. I don't know. The Dark Knight was terrible, so.
I still haven't seen it. Isn't that weird?
Don't.
I kind of don't want to. It's like the first two movies are too beautiful together and just leave it at that.
It's like 3 hours of the worst voice acting you've ever heard in your life.
I thought it was too on the nose with the whole like Occupy Wall Street stuff that was kind of going on at the same time too.
Yeah.
Like that's like so heavy handed, like we are the 99% kind of thing. I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems super douchey to me because like all those other Batman movies are like so timeless, you know?
Yeah.
And that like the conflicts or whatever are just universal, not like, oh, right. We're taking back the city. This is our stuff, you know? Fuck you, Wall Street kind of thing. Like, ugh.
Yeah. If that movie, in a lot of ways, feels like it got pooped out in a pretty big way. Like, I like the beginning, though. The idea of a frail, beat-up, cartilage-less Batman, right? Like, I feel like it started out strong. Just, like, the core idea of, hey, yo, Batman's been through some shit. And he might not be able to do this anymore, right? Because he's human.
Yeah. But after the second Batman with the Joker, I mean, how do you follow that up? They should have just been like, you know what, we're only doing two movies.
Yeah. I mean, like, whoever needed to play Bane in that third movie, and I don't know who it was who ultimately ended up doing it, needed to just knock it out of the park, and this guy did not. He wasn't even that big. I'm bigger than Bane.
Yeah.
What's going on?
You should have been Bane.
Right? So, Jared, you also played a game called Robots Invade Dream World.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard about this one yet.
Yeah, I like it. It sort of was like, never heard of it. And then it just popped up with all the releases. So I downloaded it and was trying it and was surprised how fun it is. It's like, it's weird. You play a sheep you know, robots are mad because they're not, they can't sleep like humans can. So they've decided to like attack the sheep that we count to go to sleep.
Okay.
That makes sense. And so you play as this sheep and kind of robots float up in the screen and you jump kick them like left or right. You kind of glide across the screen and jump kick them. And then you can also butt stomp them like straight down. And the whole idea is just kind of keep your combo going by continuously hitting these robots as they appear and then collecting coins, avoiding bombs and whatever. And I don't know, something about it just feels good. Like the jump kicking feels really cool. And once you get it down, you start doing like some pretty cool combos like jump kick and then butt swipe immediately and then do another jump kick. And it's kind of like neat to keep yourself going in the air. And I don't know, it's kind of just a clever game. It's simple, you know, but there's tons of cool stuff to like unlock too, like different sheep outfits, things like that, power ups, the usual kind of stuff. But yeah, I was surprised. I liked it. It's really simple, but really fun.
See, I was kind of hoping this would be kind of like a video game version of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
That's what someone in the comments mentioned.
How cool would that be?
I'm not familiar.
Very cool.
Should I be familiar?
You should read that.
Sci-fi. It's
great book. It's a great book.
No.
You might need to read it twice. I needed to read it twice, at least. I was too dumb to get it the first time.
Hey, speaking of reading, are you watching Game of Thrones on HBO?
Nope.
Oh, well, don't bother.
Yeah?
Yeah. What? Sucks.
What'd they do?
If you read the books, well, I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Well, those books have kind of been out for like a decade. I'm not too worried.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with the show. And I think I've said this before, but like in the books, the main character in the books is the universe, right? We agree on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the show, it's a typical character-driven HBO show. So in the process of doing that, like, you know, they have their cast of their, you know, 10 characters or whatever, and everyone's favorite character has to get screen time in a show. So like what's happening with season 3 is they're focusing on all like the important like events in the books while entirely skipping like the motivation and the meaning behind them.
Oh yeah. Rough.
So like if you can think of like if you read the books and you can think of several important turning points in book 3, those all happen, but they just kind of happen.
Really? Including Rob?
Well, that's coming, but yeah, I'm sure okay. That'll just be like one of those things.
Yeah,
but I don't want to spoil too much of it because the books are fantastic. Everyone should read the books. Like, if you want to watch a show, fine, but you should read the books.
I think Game of Thrones, the TV series, should just be about what was his name, Fat Belvoss.
Yeah,
dude, he was amazing.
Strong Belvoss.
That's it. Fat Belvoss will work too. What an amazing character. I hope he stars in the next season, the upcoming season. He's amazing.
But I mean, I guess one non-spoilery example is like, you know how like half of book 3 is Jaime with his his companion in the woods?
Yes.
And you learn so much about both of them, both in their motivations, who they are as a character, why they're doing what they are, and even though they're technically enemies, like they have this like intense respect for one another.
Yeah.
Like that is nowhere to be found in the show.
Did they do the thing?
They do the thing, but it doesn't make sense. And the right person doesn't even do the thing.
What? It wasn't one of the mummers?
We should probably stop talking about this.
Okay. Alright. Sorry folks, that was your Game of Thrones minute here in the middle of our podcast. Is there a game you wanted to talk about this week that you wanted to target this week? I know you played a lot.
Me?
Yeah.
I guess we could talk about, well, I played two bad free-to-play games.
Okay, that sounds normal.
Our Chillingo is RIP Rally, RIP Rally, Rest in Peace Rally, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Like, this seemed like such a promising game on first download, right? Because it's like, screenshots look cool. I downloaded the basic premises, kind of like a almost like wave-based Smash TV, like vehicular combat, twisted metal style arena. Okay. Zombie game.
I'm in. Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, you know, the first time I played it, like going through the tutorial and stuff, I was like, oh, this is sick. Because, like, it was, you know, I mean, I really like Twisted Metal. I really like how it looks kind of like Smash TV kind of games. I thought it was interesting. It was a zombie game where, you know, you were actually like, it almost had that kind of like Dead Rising feel where you were just running over all these zombies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the problem is free to play. And it is like that super gross free to play where it's like,
oh no.
It's like, hey, you can play the game forever and get coins and buy all this stuff, or you can buy coins, or guess what? If you want, you can sign up for Discover Card and we'll give you so many fucking coins that you won't even need to play the game anymore. Which is just like, I don't know, dude, when I see those offers in any game, like that just like instantly turns me off of it. Like it could be the best game ever, but if you've got one of those annoying pop-ups, it's like, hey, get free coins by signing up for Blockbuster Online. Because, like, the thing is, like, none of those offers ever feel, like, vaguely relevant to the universe of iOS gaming. I mean, like, one of the offers in there is, like, hey, take this survey to see if you qualify for a free glucose meter for diabetic people.
Wow. What kind of ad network is behind this fucking game?
I wrote it down. Hang on.
It legitimately sounds like the worst. What was the game that where we were offered a MasterCard? I think it was. I feel like it was probably maybe a year ago, but we were both very impressed by how gross this was.
The network that these offers are through is called Burstly.
Okay. They sound like a network you should avoid if you're a developer.
Yeah, they're the ones that have all the referral offers, like, you know, tap to sign up for Netflix or get a Verizon cell phone or sign up for Gamefly or whatever. And that, that seems so gross to me. Like, that by far is the grossest free to play there is.
Yeah.
Because, like, the problem is, like you shouldn't be pushing people to sign up for a credit card. That's crazy.
That's nuts.
And, like, the people that are playing these games are, like, kids, right? I mean, like, when you were a kid, you signed up for Publisher's Clearinghouse. Of course you did. Everyone did.
Hell, I signed up for credit cards when I was a kid.
And then, like, you know, your parents were left to deal with it because, you know, you thought it was a good idea to fill out the thing in the mail that was, like, 10 CDs for a penny.
Yep.
Which, I mean, this is just, like, that taken to the extremes of the App Store, which just seems, like, super gross.
Yeah.
Because if you're just some kid, I mean, like, you know, you don't care. You just want your free in-game coins to, like, you know, upgrade your bumper to run over more zombies. So here, let me just put my name into this, like, Blockbuster thing.
So, okay, let me ask you this. Do you think these guys were trying to swing for the fences? Do you think they were trying to get some of that sweet, sweet top charts free money kind of thing going on? Do you think they're trying to make, like,
rally people?
Yeah, do you think they're trying to make, like, $6,000 an hour or something like that? Like, why would they make their game like this?
I guess that's the dream for everyone, right?
But, like, I don't...
Oh, understand. It even has ads in it, too, that you can remove in the 99-cent in-lock.
Like, I don't get it. Like, I feel like Rip Rally, and granted, I haven't played it, but from your description and your positive impression,
the game is cool. Like, playing the actual game is cool. But the problem is, it's, like, layered with, like, every gross free-to-play element you can think of.
Charge $4.99 for it, and 10,000 people buy it. Did you make back your budget? You did, right? Like, how much does this game cost?
That's what's crazy. I was just thinking, like, the whole time, I was like, man, I wish this was just, you know, I just pay for this because it's a cool game.
Yeah.
But I'm not getting involved in a free-to-play game that, like, is pushing people to sign up for credit cards. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
I just won't. I refuse. Like, that's, like, one of the things that I will not do.
It's just a weird, like, mentality of, like, these developers always have to have, and, like, you don't see this in AAA space, really, is, like, I think the feeling is that you always have to have this constant influx of cash, like, constantly. Like, you know, when Firaxis releases a video game, it's just one shot, really, right? It's just like, boom, we get all our money up front, and every once in a while somebody will buy it off Steam or whatever, right? It's not...
Right.
Like, I don't understand why every iOS game has to be designed in a way where there's a constant and consistent revenue stream.
Well, dude, it's because, I mean, this kind of, like, hits on a news item that we didn't post about, because it's not really something we talk about that often, but, like, Supercell announced that they're making $2.4 million a day.
Fuck.
On two iOS games, Heyday and Clash of Clans.
Neat.
So, I mean, the scale of success in the App Store right now is so obscured that I think that, like, everyone has gone insane.
Yeah.
I mean, and those are two games. Clash of Clans is number two top grossing, and Heyday is number five. Amounts Jesus. To $2.4 million a day. So, I mean, like, when you're designing a game, I mean, why wouldn't you swing for the fences, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I
totally see what people are doing, but it just seems so gross to me. Like, I genuinely don't know what's wrong with being like, hey, this game costs us $25,000 to make. We made $75,000. That's fucking fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations.
You know, like,
yeah.
Hey, it costs us $25,000 to make. We made $50,000. Like, okay, cool. You doubled your money. Great.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what you want. I just don't, because it's like playing, like, a lottery.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, the dream is like, hey, we made this game in a month. Now we're making $1 million a day on it.
Right.
It's just like...
It doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. I feel like it...
I mean, just to figure out how much money that is, I mean, that is $28 a second they're making.
Man.
So I just like, think about that.
Good Lord. I want some of that money.
So like the, they've made, if this podcast is an hour long, they made over $100,000 while you listen to this.
That's kind of a punch in the gut. I kind of want to end it.
Isn't that crazy?
That is absolutely,
I mean, like,
nuts.
When you consider that, I mean, it makes sense why people are trying to do like the most money grubbing gross free to play they can do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I guess what made this especially weird is that it comes from Chillingo, who's a publisher that typically just will release a game for a dollar or two.
Right.
That, you know, might have very optional in-app purchase, but like, you know, it's just like, hey, here it is, here's the game.
Yeah, if you want to pay more.
Everything about this seems strange to me, so I don't really know what's going on, but
yeah, it's hard to tell, I guess. Maybe
also that Bookworm Heroes game finally came out.
Right.
That's pretty gross too from a free to play standpoint.
Yeah, that's getting like, panned.
It's one of those games where like most of the interface elements are like designed around how many coins you can get by like linking up your Facebook or like telling your Facebook friends or challenging a Facebook friend, or you know, like very like social spammy kind of like attempted virally thingy.
And I'll be frank here too. I have a really hard fucking time believing that kind of design sensibility was a PopCap idea pre EA ownership.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Like, I don't know. I'm always willing to give studios the benefit of the doubt when, you know, they're honest with us or you know, like appear to be honest and they're like, hey, you know, like, yeah, we're, I mean, like Fire Monkey's a great example. Like, I mean, I feel like we've had a great relationship with them and they seem pretty honest with us when we're like, hey, you know, how much of this was like EA turning the screws and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know. Like, it seems like if you're making money and, you know, you're, I mean, that most companies are happy with that, right? But I mean, I think you can really point to this as like an EA-ism kind of thing.
Well, you know, even to flesh that out a little bit, even if it wasn't EA directly being like, hey, you need this, it's the leadership in there. Like, right. Immediately after the EA purchase saying, or the PopCap leadership saying, well, we need to do this because this is what Clash of Clans does or whatever, you know? Yeah. Like,
dude, it is just like, I mean, I recommend downloading Bookworm Heroes just so you can see what a slap in the face it feels like compared to the previous PopCap games.
Yeah, like,
and I don't mean to say that to sound dramatic. I know it sounds dramatic, but like really, dude, when you have like games like Plants vs. Zombies and Peggle and, you know, like the original Bookworm, games that are just like totally like have everything in them like practically balanced perfect to the point that like, you know, they're enjoyable from like the spectrum of like your grandma who's never played a game before to like a hardcore Call of Duty player. I mean, like, we're talking like basically flawless games here, right? I mean, I guess you could argue whether or not they're flawless, but
yeah, you're,
but
right,
still like really good games. I mean, yeah. Peggle is a fantastic timeless game that everyone should play, you know, like,
yeah.
And then now you have like a game like this that is like totally uninspired, like free to play out the ass. Doesn't even have a single player mode that doesn't require like some kind of online connectivity, because of course they always want to be like juicing you for, you know, the like friend referral stuff.
It's the worst.
Which is just, it's just crazy. It's like, it's just sad to see that this is like what PopCap has turned into. You know what I mean? Like a developer has been such like a darling kind of developer of these really great casual games that everyone loves.
Right. Is now kind of making these soulless mainstays on the top charts.
Yeah.
Neat. Well, congratulations, PopCap. You broke my heart.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, because I know they have many internal teams that work on little things. Like, I think I've read some interview where like Peggle or something like that was just made with like two or three people or something like that. Okay. So, I mean, it is entirely possible that they have other things in the works that are like back to, you know, PopCap basics, but this is not a good sign for me.
No, for sure. And the next Peggle, pay a dollar to get another ball.
Yeah, I mean, that seems extreme, but like when you look at this game, I mean, that's like what they're doing with the fucking coin thing. So
right, yeah, I guess we'll see. Let's do some news real quick here. We're burning up this podcast. Iron Man 3. We were talking about this pre-podcast. Eli Hoed up. It's actually like a runner. Like, it fucking makes sense.
Yeah. Someone at GameLoft spent 5 seconds and was like, hey, let's make a game that makes sense.
Yeah, instead of like some shitty virtual stick brawler, they decided to make a game that not only caters to the strengths of a touch platform, but also kind of caters to the strengths of the property that they're playing off of in a smart and useful way.
It's also kind of relevant in the trends of the App Store as well, as what kind of, you know, people are playing, what they're looking for, stuff like that.
Which, you know, not to take anything away from GameLoft, because they make money hand over fist with everything they release. But at the same time, a lot of those games really aren't any good. Like, they're subpar at best.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the thing. Like, Iron Man 2 was basically the same as Spider-Man, which came out at the same time, which is basically the same as, like, whatever other brawler they had just released. And,
Batman, shit like
you
that.
You know, it was obvious that, like, someone was like, here, guys, here's the brawler engine. Go nuts. Reskinning it with, you know, whatever IP we can get.
Yeah. Yeah. You know...
It wasn't an Iron Man game as much. It was just like, hey, this is the GameLoft brawler with the Iron Man logo.
God, you know it's really happening, too. No, I like the idea. I am actually open to a GameLoft game for the first time in a long time. So I'm excited. Maybe it'll be good.
I mean, they're being super vague about, like, you know, how you pay for it and stuff, because obviously it's a free-to-play game. But it kind of, the marketing text they sent over is kind of giving me, like, you know, Temple Run-y kind of, like, buy power-ups jive, which, I mean.
Okay.
That's cool. That works well. People like that, so whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Other big item of the news this week, the Edge drama has finally come to a close. You posted this this morning, Thursday morning, Eli Hodep. I thought it's a really interesting story. So basically, finally, after the lawsuits and stuff, the Edge name is now off the table for, like, trademarks or whatever, right? Is
that they officially finally took the trademarks away from Tim Langdell. Like, I didn't think it was so long ago that all this shit happened. I guess, like, the courts officially, like, you know, did all their proceedings in, like, late 2010. But it wasn't until so. Like, actually now that, like, they actually, like, stripped the trademarks from him, which, like, there's probably some entirely convoluted government process that, like, only lawyers understand of why that took so long. But I mean, I guess that's cool. Yeah. Imagine Moby Game is pouring pouring out the drinks in celebration.
Yeah,
but, man, imagine. Those guys got shit on hard with the Edge trademark stuff.
Yeah,
I think their game was off the store for a good, like, 6 months or something like that because of that.
Yeah, they lost it for a while. That was rough. But basically, you know, for me, these kinds of stories just boil down to our trademark and patent system too are fucking just broken. Broken. You can just do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. I think you'd have a hard time coming up with someone that can, you know, give you a strong argument as to why, you know, this kind of thing should be allowed to happen.
Yeah. And even dudes like us who know it's broken, I think we're also going to have a hard time finding somebody who can figure out a way to fucking fix it because it's such a bureaucratic, crazy, instilled kind of, it's like a fucking institution. Patent your idea, charge somebody 20 years down the line for your vague ass idea.
Yeah. I mean, that was the irritating part of this is how, like, incredibly vague he was able to get his trademark. So, like, they applied to, like, anything with the word Edge in it.
Right.
Which, I mean, that seems like really, really, really wrong.
That sounds pretty fucked up.
But I don't know. I mean, it's the same as what's going on with, like, those Lodsys guys that are just, like, you know, patent trolling with the in-app purchase stuff.
Yeah. So. Although, you know, poking Apple... You know, company that, you know, has a little bit of money. Seems like the wrong thing to do, for me at least.
I mean, I think where we left off that drama was, like, Apple was in legal proceedings with them, but that stuff takes so long that Lodsys can still go on harassing everyone else until, like,
right,
you know, that all goes through. And, like really, if you're an iOS developer and you have a game with in-app purchase or whatever, and you're making a considerable amount of money on it, and you have this company that can potentially take it all away, or... You can give them like $5,000. Like, I see why they're making so much money.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be way easier to just cut a check for $5,000 and, like, try to fight this because you're probably going to spend that much on a lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's fucked up that that's kind of the situation that our patent and trademark system allows. But
yeah.
Such is life.
Such is life. And such are our emails. Let's get to a couple real quick. Andy writes in, I got to respond to Eli's theories about my banana mouth email, and he has a recap here in case we forgot.
Is that pervert?
last week I wrote in about my spontaneous cases of banana mouth, and it was suggested I was making the whole thing up because of some kind of banana mouth fetish. Dear Eli, no, I do not have a banana mouth fetish. Anyone who knew the horrors of banana mouth would never think such a thing. No one would ever be so sick as to enjoy anything to do with banana mouth. That's like saying someone has a fetish for the Ebola virus. Bananas and mouse don't go together. It's as simple as that. Brett knows exactly what I'm talking about. Not sure why there are so many doubters out there when the facts are so clear. I guess banana mouth is just too scary for some people to accept. Someone also claimed I actually benefited from banana mouth since it forced me to immediately brush my teeth and Listerine my mouth out. I'll have you know that I had excellent oral hygiene even before I was ever stricken with banana mouth. My teeth are blindingly white, so in no way is the banana mouth pandemic helping me out or somehow making me a better person. And I gotta say, even after a thorough mouth cleanse, there's still a lingering taste of banana mouth. Banana mouth is just plain awful, and there's no silver lining of any kind. Thoughtful response.
There you go.
Thoughtful response.
We can all agree on that.
Mummy Man Tommy has just thanked us for reaching episode 100. He also says, I've been a Team Nicholson follower since the early Hydra days, and it's great to see you being surrounded with more awesome folks that like to say words for people to hear on the internets. Here's to 100 more episodes of muscles, beards, and sometimes video games.
Sometimes video games.
Here's Scott here, who has cheated on us. He's written us about a different podcast, but I'll go ahead and read it, I guess. I heard an interesting discussion on the Idle Thumbs podcast this week regarding a couple of early access alpha stage games. One of the hosts brought up that early alpha access funding is a viable alternative to the free-to-play model and pointed to Minecraft, Kerbal Space Program, Prison Architect, and Don't Starve as examples in the PC gaming space. I'm not so sure this model would work on mobile given the push these days towards free-to-play and how that's the only model that works today in which you can expect to make a lot of money, especially considering the recent news that Supercell is printing gobs of cash using free-to-play. The early alpha funding approach makes sense to me, though, because I pay upfront to get early access to a game that is a known thing, and I also get access to whatever they come out with in the future. It also could be a nice alternative to Kickstarter because I get something to play now early on, and also the people who play the game in the alpha essentially act as bug testers for the dev. What are your thoughts on early access funding models? Would it ever have success on the App Store?
Well, something like this.
Do this?
Yeah, it used to be like there's been tons of games where it was like they would release something, it'd be a buck, and then in the forums are like, hey, I have all these ideas to add stuff, but I need to sell this many copies to make sure it's worth it, and you know, whatever. I think the majority of those situations ended up being the game never got updated again.
Yeah, you know, I feel like a lot of people got burnt on that. I can
Very rarely did someone come through and come, you know, with all their promises after people bought their game and stuff.
But the problem with that was, I mean, like I don't think that it's fair to like shed negative light on developers that did that. Not that we are, but like I think it's easy for people to like go back and be like, oh, he ripped me off and all this stuff. I mean, like,
yeah,
you know, like perfect example of when this happened was do you remember like Chris Jones, before he was EverPlay and all that stuff, released a game called Sparta, right? Sparta kind of shot up the charts, and like I think it was his first game, or you know, like if it wasn't his first game, it was his first success on iOS and everything like that. And this dude was just like clamoring to deliver his fans like whatever they wanted, right? So I mean, Jared, you remember this, right? I mean, like the Sparta promises were like insane. I mean, like completely out of this world and stuff like that. But I mean, so people were, I guess, buying into like the alphaware stuff then, and it just kind of snowballed into like completely unrealistic stuff. Which, I mean, I think it's very easy to get into overpromising when you have people buying your game that want more stuff that like you kind of feel obligated to give them what they want because they're your customers, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's kind of messy either way. I mean, I think that in PC world, people are way more accommodating to the fact that like, hey, I'm buying beta software.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also kind of weird for a mobile game to be like, oh, I spent a buck on this thing, and you're going to add all this stuff. I mean, game development takes time. So, I mean, is someone really going to sit around and wait 6 months for, like, episode two of their, like, $1 game, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Some people, yeah, but the vast majority of people are going to be like, well, I moved on a long time ago. Yeah,
Pocket God was updated a million times. That was essentially the Pocket God model, too.
They needed to do that, like, weekly to stay, you know, relevant or whatever. But that's got to be, like, the best 99-cent investment any person's ever made, ever.
On the technical side, I mean, the App Store just doesn't have the kind of functionality that Steam does, or even like a website that offers a beta game. Like, you just can't offer a game.
Yeah, well, I don't think that you can.
True too, yeah.
I don't think you can even say that, hey, this is in beta or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
You have to release it's a quote unquote a finished product or whatever. And if you give out updates or whatever, that's cool. But
yeah.
I think I seem to remember there being drama about like Apple not allowing you to promise things that aren't in the game in your iTunes text or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
That'd be smart. I mean, that seems like a smart thing. I just don't think that'll work. I think that's always going to be a PC model. I don't even think consoles are going to be able to hit it, to be honest.
The problem is with this, though, too, is that, like, it's easy to point at something like Minecraft and be like, well, why don't people just do Minecraft? I mean, that's almost as silly as being like, well, why don't you just make Clash of Clans? They're making millions of dollars.
Right.
It's like, you know, there's
just win
there's
a lot
so
of
much,
to be rich.
Yeah, there's so much more that goes into it that, like, I don't even necessarily think the success of Clash of Clans has to do with it being free to play specifically as much as, like, I don't think the success of Minecraft has to do with the fact that, like, you know, they offered such early access. Like, I think that there's just a lot of magic in both those games that, you know, you can't point at one thing as like, hey, more people should do this.
They're almost phenomenons in a way.
Right.
Minecraft and Clash of Clans, like, respectively, are, like, outside even these spheres of, like, free-to-play or early access games because they're just so ridiculously huge. Right? Because you mentioned Kerbal Space Program. I'm not knocking down your point. It's a good point. But, you know, if you mention Minecraft and Kerbal Space Program in the same breath, you also kind of have to say these games aren't even close in audience, like, anywhere near
right
in the vicinity of what's right. going on. Yeah. Although they're both cool. So
it's kind of amazing how popular Minecraft is now. I mean, like, they're... Yeah. Someone on Twitter posted some, like, I guess you can, I don't really know how to do, you can go into Google Trends and, like, you know, bring up, like line graphs of search terms and stuff like that. And Minecraft is beating, like, Justin Bieber and, like, everything else for Google searches.
Really? Is it beating, like, sex?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I feel like sex should probably still be on top. Ah! I just.
Hey, I get it.
Oh, no. I did that by accident. That was great. Thank you for joining us this week on episode 100 of the Touch Arcade Show. And again, if you've been listening all this time, or even if you just picked it up, if you're a brand new listener, if this is where you started, first, I apologize. Secondly, thanks for sticking with us. If you'd like to write us an email, you can go ahead and do so, podcast@toucharcade.com. If you'd like to connect with us via a different means, you can totally do so, facebook.com/toucharcade. Twitter.
Oh, yeah, I just looked it up. Sex is way more than Minecraft. Oh, Google.
Twitter.com/TouchArcade. Also, we have an app. Just type in Touch Arcade, one word, into your iTunes search bar and download the most electrifying app to date. Guys, episode 100. Parting thoughts?
I can't wait to get to 1,000.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Nice. We'll see you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.